Okay, the lesson is going to be a simple one, and it's one that we need to consider. And sometimes it becomes necessary for walls to come down. And so we're going to see that. Come on. There we go. All right, in this study, we will notice several biblical instances where the walls came down. You might be thinking of some of those yourself right now. And we hope to accomplish several points in this lesson. First of all, the lesson, the necessity of the walls coming down. And that's very important. And the appearance or the impossibility of it happening. In other words, they look at that, there's no way that wall's coming down. And that's what they see. And then we're going to see the application of the lessons in our personal lives. So we hope to accomplish these things in this lesson. Now, the first one we want to look at is Jericho. It's our first appearance of walls coming down found in the book of Joshua. And as the children of Israel entered the promised land, they came upon a well-fortified city. And hopefully you're familiar with the story, but it was a mighty city with huge walls. In fact, people even lived within those walls. Not only in the city, but in the walls of that city. It was very big and very high, and it was there. And as the children of Israel approached, the inhabitants of the city prepared to defend it. What'd they do? They got on the top of the wall. They had their bows and arrows. They had their spears. They had whatever tools they needed. They were ready to defend their city. And the walls were so high, there's no way people were going to jump on that wall and climb over. Even with a big, long ladder, you'd need like about 100-foot tall ladder. Anybody ever been on a ladder more than 10 feet tall? No, you're way up there. And so that would be very dangerous, not to mention unstable. And so they were there prepared to defend it. But you can imagine their perplexity when the Israelites, all they did, they marched around one time, they marched around the city one time, and they left. They probably looking at each other, what is going on here? These people are coming and we're ready to defend our city. What is going on here? Well, guess what? They did it the next day and the next day. And so after 6 days of this process was probably getting on the annoying side more than anything else. And they're sitting there, what's wrong with these people? These people make no sense at all. They just walk around the city and then they leave? I mean, they're crazy about this. But then, these people knew there was absolutely no way that anyone could climb the walls and overcome them. And that's basically how they felt about it. But we see that the confidence of the people was in the walls and not in God. And so the walls became their own destruction, because on that last day, the seventh day, they marched 7 times around. Then what did they do? They just shouted and the trumpets blew and the walls fell outward. And the Israelites were able to go in and take the city. Now, the next one we want to look at is Nineveh. Nineveh, we're looking several years later, about 600 years later. All right, in the land of Assyria. The great city of Nineveh was a marvel of the world, and its engineering would astound anyone who studied it as well as anyone who physically saw it. It was actually kind of like a round city that had basically 3 giant levees around it. And we're talking walls that are basically about 200 feet high. They're about 80 feet wide, where they could take a 4-horse chariot and make a U-turn without any problem. And so it's very large. And all along this levee system, there were additional towers about another 100 feet up. And so the idea of somebody attacking that city, I mean, it was a large city. Later on, we would find out this city was so big that there were 120,000 who were either too young to know the right hand from the left or just weren't mentally capable of doing that. There were like 120,000 of those. So that's just a small segment. So we're looking at probably 2 million people in this area. And in these between these levees, they had all their houses, their farms, their where they grazed their cattle. And then, of course, there were the outposts where all the soldiers were staying. I mean, the engineering was just marvelous when you think about it. And this city was in a period of prosperity and greatness. I mean, they were the great nation of the Assyrians. And a prophet of God said that in a few short years, in a very short campaign, the walls would be breached and the city destroyed. What did people do? They laughed at them. They made fun of them. They said, that just doesn't make sense. See, Nahum was laughed at for making such predictions. Yet in a few years, it actually happened. And Jonah also went in there, and he kind of got them squared away for a little while, but that didn't last very long. So what is so amazing is when we read of the details involving this great city, and its structure and the way it was built and how it was protected, and then how the walls came down. You know what they did? The enemy, the Chaldeans, they dammed up the river many miles from the city. They couldn't see it from the city. They dammed up the river and got a big whole bunch of water. And you know what happens when floodwaters start coming? We've been watching it on TV, haven't we? We've been seeing over there in Tennessee the floods and New York City from the hurricane and all. I mean, water does a lot of damage. So they busted up the dam that was up there, and all this water came down the Tigris River, and guess what? It breached the walls. I mean, it was that powerful. And the Chaldeans went in and took the city without any problem. They just followed the water in and took the city. See, once again, the people put their trust in the walls to protect them, and they were not prepared when the walls were destroyed. Then we read about Babylon. We also understand Babylon. See, our third instance we want to mention is the destruction of the great city of Babylon. What can we say about Babylon? There's probably never been a city so well built, protected, maintained, and admired in all of human history. Getting pretty close when you look at some of the cities over in Dubai, where we see all these massive buildings going up and the world's tallest structures and all the different types of technology they're employing in those cities. I mean, it's amazing what we see there. But for his day, I mean, 2,600 years ago, Babylon was the most awesome thing that had been and would be for many thousands of years. And it was admired by all. And they had a wall that was so large, it was just boggles the mind to comprehend it. Now, imagine a wall that is about 20 stories high surrounding a city the size of Houston, Texas. You know, I don't know if some of you have been to Houston. Houston is huge, 4 million people just in the city alone, then another 8 million in the suburbs around it. Here's a 20-story tall building, tall wall, looking up there. How are we going to breach that? And you know what? Even there, on that wall, they had other towers that rose another 100 to 200 feet so that they could look out and see for miles in the distance and see if there's any enemy coming. Then all they have to do is just sound the alarm and whoosh! Everybody be on the walls ready to defend it. And it's no wonder that Nebuchadnezzar was filled with pride when he looked at what he had done. You know, Daniel said, okay, you're going to lose your mind. You're going to be like a beast of the field. And this is what happened. Nebuchadnezzar was up on his roof looking at all this stuff that I've done. Look what I have done. Then all of a sudden, the Lord took his spirit away, and he became like an animal. He went out. No clothing. I mean, he was out there, let the dew of the field keep his hair wet, and he ate grass, just like the animals. And that happened for about 7 years until he came to his senses. And once again, the walls were the downfall of the people. They had so much security and trust in those walls, they only put a handful of guards to keep watch. And that's true. They only had maybe a dozen guards up there when this happened. And the rest of the people enjoyed their festivals. You know, actually, it said they had a different festival to a different god every week. Every week they'd have a different festival. And what happened in those festivals? Well, it's just like our Cinco de Mayo and St. Patrick's Day. It's just an opportunity to get wasted. That's all it is. And that's what they were doing. They were all getting wasted and living up, or so they thought. In one particular feast, the king was sitting there and he looked over and saw a hand writing on the wall. And it scared him. In fact, his knees started knocking together. He was so scared by what he had seen. And he didn't recognize the language because he didn't grow up reading that Hebrew language. And so he started inquiring the magicians and the soothsayers and the generals, what does this mean? What does this mean? What does that mean? And then finally the queen comes in. You do have somebody in the kingdom who can interpret that for you. So they called Daniel, which they had named Belteshazzar. And he came in and said, you know what? The kingdom of Babylon is over. We're wiped out. Now, what we learn is that the very moment Daniel said, this kingdom is wiped out, and this is recorded in Daniel chapter 5, at that very moment that he was speaking, the Medes were entering the city underneath the wall in a waterway. See, once again, they blocked up the waterway. The water level went down. They walked right on in. They, by stealth, they climbed up to the wall, captured the guards, and said, okay, you can drop your weapon and live, or we'll just kill you right here. I mean, how would you react? You'd drop your weapon pretty quick, wouldn't you? You want to live. And so, that's what we see happen. And then they went in and captured the king that night. And it was reported that the king was the only casualty in that encounter, because that's what Daniel said. You've been weighed in the balance, and you have been found wanting, and your soul is required of you this evening. So, as we see, the Medes were not interested in the upkeep of the city and let it go into ruins. And then the city of Babylon was never rebuilt again. And this is fulfillment of prophecy. Isaiah made the prophecy against Babylon. Amos made the prophecy against Babylon. Micah and Jeremiah made the prophecy against Babylon that it would never be inhabited again except by wild beasts. And that's basically happened that way. Even now, I mean, they found the ruins of Babylon, but nobody lives there. For a long time, it was a protected site for archaeologists only. And now, all of a sudden, since the Islamic people didn't like these symbols of religious authority or things from the past, they've been destroying everything. So nobody's ever going to live in Babylon again. Come on. Okay. So, as time went along, the walls were broken and torn down, never to be built again. And that was according to prophecy. And then we have Jerusalem. I mean, this is actually before Babylon's walls went down. But we want to study Jerusalem. And we read in the book of Jeremiah of the terrible conditions of Jerusalem. Nebuchadnezzar had come and surrounded the city and cut off its supply lines. Can you imagine how long we would survive if some foreign government put a wall around the Bay Area and wouldn't let anything come in? No milk trucks, no bread trucks, no gasoline, no fuel, nothing. We'd start running out of food pretty quick, wouldn't we? We'd start running out of supplies, and then it'd be pretty deplorable conditions. people would definitely be stealing from each other, trying to get something so they could eat. I mean, it was a pretty bad situation. It got to the point where people were eating their own children. That's how despicable it was. And there was no happiness at all. But see, the people had too much pride to see that a real danger existed. And why is that? Well, they were what they thought, they were the children of God. God would never allow anything like that to happen. You know, that's how they felt about it. That's probably the attitude they expressed. God won't let anything happen to us. We're his children. And, I mean, that's it. Doesn't matter that they have rejected God and turned their back on God for nearly 400 years now. Oh, but they're the children of God, so they think they're going to be safe. Well, see, that's their problem. They thought they were beyond defeat because of the great wall surrounding them. But that didn't last very long, because Nebuchadnezzar built up a siege mound against it. Now, if you don't know what that is, what they do is they, about 150, 200 feet away from the bottom of the wall, they start piling up rocks. And they keep piling up rocks and piling up more rocks until finally this pile of rocks is a lot higher than the wall. Then all of a sudden they start piling rocks in the gap between, and guess what? That gap kind of keeps getting less and less. And then finally, the Chaldeans were able to just rush into the city and capture everybody. See, they did not consider that God would turn against them as he promised them that they would. That's what happens when some people get so much confidence in their faith, they stop serving God. And people do that. And we know that's the case. Well, God's going to protect me. I'm his child. I mean, I don't have anything to fear. Once I'm saved, I'm always going to be saved, is how some people feel. Some people teach that. Then there's another wall we want to read about, called the dividing wall. We read about this here in Ephesians chapter 2, beginning in verse 11. And it's in here in the New Testament. It wasn't a physical wall, but it was a spiritual wall. And so, meeting the objective of our sermon goals, we will see the necessity of this wall coming down. It needed to come down. Why? Because it was there. And because a lot of people felt there's no way this wall is going to be broken down. And we'll see that. And we'll see who was responsible for it happening. See, in Ephesians 2, let's begin reading verse 11. Therefore, remember that formerly you, the Gentiles in the flesh, who are called uncircumcision by the so-called circumcision, which is performed in the flesh by human hands, remember that you were at that time separate from Christ, excluded from the commonwealth of Israel, and strangers to the covenant of promise, having no hope and without God in this world. But now, in Christ Jesus, you who were formerly far off have been brought near by the blood of Christ. For he himself is our peace, who made both groups into one and broke down the barrier of the dividing wall. And by abolishing in his flesh the enmity, which is the law of commandments contained in ordinances, that in himself he might make the two into one new man, thus establishing peace, and might reconcile them both in one body to God through the cross, by it having put to death the enmity. Now, why was this necessary to be said? Because Jews hated Gentiles. Just that plain and simple. Gentiles, you're not even human beings. You don't even have souls. You're nothing. And so the Jews had a problem with the Gentiles, and because of their animosity towards the Gentiles, how do you think the Gentiles felt? Well, we don't like you either. I mean, that's just that easy to see. But there was a dividing wall that separated the Jews from the Gentiles. And Christ said, no more. It's not going to be that way anymore. And so we're all going to be one in Christ. We're all going to be one in our faith, in our goals, in our efforts, and in everything. And that's what we read throughout the New Testament, our duty to respond to each other and take care of each other. So Jesus broke down this barrier of the dividing wall. Now here's where it's going to get a little personal sometimes, because sometimes we build our own walls. We put up walls ourselves between certain individuals. We put up walls between maybe certain groups and people we don't like. We put up a wall and we don't want to deal with them. And let's face it, if someone starts insulting you, what are you going to do? You're going to put up that wall real quick. I mean, if someone's trying to chastise you, you're not going to see the love that they're offering it. You're going to think, okay, that's hatred speech. I don't want to hear it. And therefore, that's what we're dealing with, the cancel culture we have these days. You said something I don't like. I don't want to hear it. So you have to shut up. I mean, there's walls taking place. Our personal walls that we are aware of. And we put up these walls. We have walls of animosity. We have walls of envy. We have walls of all kinds. And so we know that a wall is put up to keep out those who are not welcome and to protect and keep those who are invited in. Sometimes, like in a prison, there's walls to keep people in. We don't want them out. We don't want them out in our society because they're too dangerous. And then other people put up walls that basically we want to keep our people in here and protected. So walls are put up for many different reasons. And we all have confidence in our own dwelling places. You know, the four walls that we dwell in. Now, some people have different shaped houses. You might have 15 walls. I don't know. But still, we have in our own abode, which is our castle. I mean, we feel a sense of security. And when we are robbed, our life seems to be shattered because we feel violated in some way. I don't know if you've ever been robbed, but yeah, if you know somebody who has been, that's one of the first things they say, I feel violated. I feel vulnerable, and I don't feel secure anymore. And so that's something that happens. So what do? Well, if they're going to stay there, they usually put up burglar bars. They put up an electric fence. They take whatever measures they think they can. They put on more locks, and they make a habit of making sure their windows are locked and their doors are locked. And they might get a security service that if somebody tries to break in, they'll notify the officials. But their life feels violated in some way. And that can happen to us. When our security is basically interrupted, we feel vulnerable. And so this is a wall. What is to be a place of safety where you relax your guard and rest from your labors? It can be a place of insecurity if someone invades or breaches the confines of that wall. And sometimes, have you ever heard the expression, I feel like a prisoner in my own house? We've heard that expression. And really, when this pandemic started last year, a lot of people were saying those very words. Feel like a prisoner in my house. Why? Because I can't let anybody in. I got to lock all the doors, make sure everything's locked and secure everything, and get in my own little place. And sometimes this includes our close relationships, you know, family. Family relationships or close friends. Somehow if that security is breached, you feel violated. I mean, if your spouse cheats on you, you feel violated yourself. You do that. You despise what they did. You don't like what they did, but you feel violated, and there's a lack of trust in that relationship now. It's almost like, I can't ever trust them again. And that's why a lot of people just go ahead and divorce, because they cannot trust that relationship again. And this can happen in our church family as well. I mean, somebody says something, maybe not even realizing it, and guess what? Someone's offended. I mean, it happens. We heard that today. Yeah, it happens. And so we just have to be very careful there in the relationships that we have and make sure that we are keeping them sound as they should be. But then each of us has a wall. We all have a wall. And the last wall that needs to come down is the one that you have built up between you and God. You know, there are some people don't have that much of a problem. It's a very small wall, but it still needs to be taken out between you and God. In order to have that relationship with God, it's got to be based on His terms and done His way. And sometimes, if we want to do something different, we start constructing a wall and we say, God, stay out. You know, they did this in the Old Testament days. In Isaiah chapter 30, beginning about verse 8, they say, to the seers, do not see, and to the prophets, do not prophesy, but speak to us smooth words. And don't tell us any more about the Holy One of Israel. The people turned their back on God and didn't even want to hear about God. And so that can happen. And so these people were building up a wall between them and God. They didn't want God messing with them. And most of the world does not want that now. They don't want some God telling them how to behave. They want to do what they want to do. And so, if you think that building a wall will keep him from seeing you, you are wrong. You think, well, I can build this wall and nobody's going to see what happens inside my house. Wrong there. God sees. You think that building a wall will keep him out. You are wrong. God is everywhere. God sees everything. And you think that a wall will protect you in judgment day. Guess what? You will be lost. Where we place our trust in most cases turns out to be our downfall. If we don't put our trust in Jesus Christ and the word that he has given to us, that will be our downfall. And a lot of people come up with all sorts of things to think that keeps them safe. Every one of these cities that we mentioned and the religions we mentioned relied upon the walls and not upon God for their protection and their security. And we can do the same thing. When we build up our walls and separate ourselves from each other, separate ourselves from other individuals, separate ourselves from our responsibilities, that's going to affect us. We're going to pay the price for it. So are you willing for your walls to come tumbling down? We hope so. If you want to go to heaven, it is necessary. And that's something we should know by now. And sometimes it might seem like, well, that's impossible. There's no way I can break down my wall. Well, it can happen if you choose to do so. A lot of people choose not to, and that's going to be their downfall. So won't you allow Jesus to enter into your heart and you become obedient to his commands? Put your trust in God. Put your trust in Jesus. And do what he says so that you can go to heaven when it's all over. Because if you don't, you're not going to see heaven. That wall will keep you out of the pathway of heaven. So that's our lesson. Consider these thoughts. I mean, walls do need to come down. And I just mentioned a few walls. I'm sure you all can come up with some of your own walls. What separates me from another? And what separates me? And what are the various reasons that makes this separation? Some people want to say, well, color is a problem there. Some people want to say culture is a problem. Some people want to say background or the language they speak is a problem. No. You have as much responsibility to break down these walls as everybody else does. And there should be no walls inside the church. There should be no walls between us and for any reason. So we are here for each other. That's the only way. And if we keep working together, we'll go to heaven together. So consider those thoughts. We're going to sing our invitation song. If anyone has a need to respond, we invite you to come while we stand and sing.